this is Lena Life with my wonderful guests today. I am absolutely thrilled to introduce the people who are representing the highest level of life with purity, taste, conviction, and philosophy for our best living habits. And their names are Amanda Strombom and Stuart Rose, were kind enough, patient enough, to write absolutely beautiful book, such important book for everyday living and for everyday philosophy of vision for the best of life. And this book calls Say No to Meat. I need to make a few comments just before I will invite my guest authors to this discussion, and wanted to make clear that we are not going to criticize or offend anyone who are indeed devoted meat eaters. We're also not going to make some kind of critical suggestions or offensive comments regarding the people who are planning indeed stay in the meat diet. We're only going to expand in a practical health vision with the benefits of a vegetarian diet with all components of it, with the different variations of it, with benefits. And we also will give you the choice and open your mind that there are alternatives in our tastes, in our menu, in our living, and ultimately in our health. So on this note, I wanted to welcome my very special guests, Amanda Strombom and Stuart Rose. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We're glad to be here.
And I'd like to start our conversation with a couple of my own points. I like to say that vegetarian diet actually has tremendously long history. And in fact, we are, as human beings, partly vegetarians because we do have this growing world around ourselves. And yet, we're somewhat neglecting our own habits and our own instincts. And of course, our modern life with its tastes, habits, and very strong tradition of thinking that if you don't have meat at a meal, you didn't eat anything, is captivating some people's mind, needless to say, children's habits as well. And I guess my first question would be, how would you clarify the fact that indeed meatless life is a full life, and that civilization sometimes can be extremely misleading with the benefits of vegetarian diet as a whole?
Would you like to take that one?
Sure. Well, basically speaking, scientists have determined that our bodies designed, as I think you were just saying, our anatomy and our physiology is best suited to a vegetarian diet. You know, your listeners could ask themselves this question: how many of the people out there think they could run out into a field with nothing but their fingernails and their teeth, catch a cow, kill a cow, cut to its hide, and eat its raw meat for lunch? When one stops and considers that almost everyone could peel a banana or pull an apple off a tree or a potato out of the ground, one sees that our bodies are very well suited to a vegetarian diet. Meat eating in any large amount only came into being when we developed domestication of animals, tools, in large-scale agriculture. Until then, most of humanity lived on a largely vegetarian diet. So a vegetarian diet is really very well along the lines of the plan and design of our bodies, which is one of the reasons why it's so healthy. And meat eating, especially meat eating to the degree that it goes on today, is something that's been artificially introduced in recent years. You know, here in the U.S., the daily consumption of meat, fish, poultry, dairy and eggs has skyrocketed in the past 30 or 40 years. We're eating way, way more meat than our parents or our grandparents' generation did, and it's costing us in terms of health. So since meat eating is not particularly good for our health and our bodies are not designed for it, a lot of people choose the vegetarian option as something that is more fitting with their nature and is more fitting with traditional societies around the world. You know, there's in different parts of the world, there are the Hunza in Asia, the foothills of the Himalayas. They're total vegetarians, and they're considered the healthiest people on the planet. The Vilcabamba in Ecuador, and also the Acostasia in Georgia in the Caucasus, are like the second and third healthiest people in the world. And, you know, all those groups are vegetarian groups. And so a lot of traditional diets were largely vegetarian. Most cultures did eat some meat, but it was a rare occasion when they did so.
I like to start to be more diligent regarding your book. And I would say that, in general, it's extremely charming looking book, which so easy to read, but not in a simplification or somewhat degrading its quality in terms of the information. Not at all. It is engaging, it's inviting, it's clear. I love the fact that it is beautifully organized by short chapters, so anyone can find a little corner there. So someone who is somewhat antagonistic to the whole philosophy will be certainly engaged with the question, well, maybe something is there. The people who are indeed idolizing your way of living and your knowledge would find a wonderful clarification and much better orientation than something which they already know. And I like to address, especially perhaps starting from the beginning in your chapter, the basic, what's this book about, where you're referring to Chinese proverb, which says that everything starts or journey starts with but a single step. So if we can focus on this very wise suggestion, where is the first step?
I would suggest that the first step would be to try a vegetarian meal for yourself if you've never tried one before. If a lot of people think that, like you said, meat is the center of their diet, and they can't imagine eating vegetarian foods. But there are so many vegetarian choices out there these days that if you just experiment a little bit and, you know, make maybe Tuesdays a veggie day or the follow the Meatless Monday campaign, they're suggesting that just eating one day a week, just vegetarian, but really just starting a little bit at a time and experimenting with some new foods that you haven't tried before, a bean burrito, for example, or a veggie stir fry, or some simple meal that is readily available that can get you started and help you to realize that there's a lot of good, tasty food out there that doesn't include meat.
I certainly, I feel that the more our conversation will evolve, the more issues and questions I like to bring I feel somewhat pleasantly overwhelmed because we certainly hope to touch of physiology of reformation of our taste, because once this gradual shift is taking place from meat to vegetables, there are so many naturally designed mechanisms will change its course in our body, less craving for sugar, for example, and more natural needs to have liquid. There are so many hidden, wonderful little changes which are taking place, might be great encouragement for people to try what you just suggested. And with that, I wanted to come to the point of different types of vegetarian diet. Again, I wanted to say that being somewhat familiar with the microbiotic diet, which is, in a nutshell, they eat what is growing. Mm-hmm. And yes, they do allow a little bit piece of white chicken meat on a rare occasion if people have really severe problem with the blood sugar. But in general, if we will come to your book again, you give a very clear clarification and compartmentalization of different vegetarian diet. I particularly was taken by pesco vegetarian. And pesco, I guess it's just from pesce, from Italian word for fish. So if you can jump in and tell us about different kind of vegetarian.
Amanda, would you like to take that?
Okay. So the main definition of a vegetarian is someone who doesn't eat any meat, poultry, or fish. So that's beef, chicken, pork, sausages, bacon, all of those foods are removed from the diet. A pesco vegetarian, as you mentioned, does include fish, and that's not really a proper vegetarian diet because you know, a lot of people go to that as a first step. They think that that's one way to feel like they're moving towards a vegetarian diet without actually quite being ready to go there at first. The different types of vegetarian diet, once you're eating a vegetarian diet, you can include eggs, or you could not include eggs. And someone who does include eggs would say that they were an ovo-vegetarian. Someone who includes dairy in their diet would say that they're a lacto-vegetarian. Someone who includes both dairy and eggs would say they were a lacto-ovo-vegetarian. And then the strict vegetarian, which is otherwise known as a vegan, is someone who doesn't eat any animal products. And so they would cut out all the dairy and all the eggs as well. And some vegans will go as far as cutting out honey from their diet and things like that too, because honey is obviously produced by bees. So a strict vegetarian or a vegan diet includes no animal products at all. And I think those are the main categories of vegetarian diets. Some people are just transitioning to a vegetarian diet, and they like to think of themselves as vegetarian, but they still eat, you know, just a little bit of meat once in a while. And those people have another name, which I'm just blanking on right now. I haven't got the page open in my book.
I'm not going to be that ambitious, but maybe I will help you because I made my own notes. But I see only regarding vegan, regarding eggs.
Oh, a flexitarian. That was the word I was thinking
of. Flexitarian, yes. I love the sound of it. Flexitarian, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a real vegetarian diet, but again, for people who are transitioning towards a vegetarian diet, some people like to feel that they have a name that they can give themselves, and a flexitarian is someone who eats very little animal products but still eats them once in a while.
We can give some statistics to give a broad, big picture. You being that diligent and you express this in your book again in the beginning, that 3.2% of U.S. adults, which is mounting to 7.3 million Americans, are indeed vegetarians.
Yeah, and that was done in a 2008 poll, so that may well be there may well be more by now. It's certainly changing on a regular basis as more and more people learn the benefits of a vegetarian diet.
And now we will go a little bit in a sensitive area, because unfortunately even politics found its nest in food and in vegetarianism. It was very strongly politicized, and I will ask you to make your comment and to expand on this in a direct relationship with what you wrote in your book, because that really took me by surprise.
Stuart, would you like to take that one?
Yes.
Sure. Well, exactly what aspect would you like me to address?
Well, the how politics found itself in philosophy and vegetarian way of living and eating, because there is a certain opposition towards vegetarianism where politics perhaps connecting to some commercial interest for meat certainly was not very encouraging for people to shift towards vegetarian diets.
Right. Well, let me make a few points here. First, let me dispel the notion. There's a lot of stereotypes about vegetarians themselves out there, that they're either progressives or liberals, or they're conservatives, or... And the answer is, actually, there's plenty of both. Diversity is the rule rather than the exception in the vegetarian world. You'll find Republicans, you'll find Democrats, you'll find people of every generation, of every ethnic group. So the first thing to do when one is trying to understand the vegetarians themselves and their movement is to give up on any attempt at stereotyping. You'll find them in every walk of life, from social service and welfare to some of the most famous military leaders of all time. They're just, it's just very, very diverse, and the only way to understand the vegetarians themselves is to embrace their diversity. However, in recent years, there has been a shift in some sectors of society to value not being judgmental, to value everybody getting along at the expense of the facts about food and its production. And briefly, we term this rather loosely postmodernism, which says that there's no good food or bad food, only different food, and that there were no facts about nutrition, only opinions. And if everybody's opinions are equal, therefore, who's to say what the better plan of eating is? And here the vegetarians are an S, and that's kind of formed the new political correctness. And we think, without having any opinion on political correctness in general, but that if one did want to be politically correct, that in this case, it's misplaced. There are facts about nutrition. They're very well established, and they've been reestablished really without any reasonable level of doubt. And there is information on it. Now, meat is big business in America, and that's the other part that influences the politics. And these corporations will defend their interests. But, you know, it's interesting that even they sense that vegetarianism is the wave of the future, as all the major food corporations have bought up and taken significant positions in the vegetarian food industry, thinking that this someday will be the future. And so food exists in a societal context. Of course, we affirm the freedom of everybody to eat however they want, but we would like to put our information out there in the marketplace of ideas and not filter it through a political lens when we do so. Or I should say a lens of political correctness.
I like to add a few points to this. However, I think there is a logical continuation in mentioning, again, in your book, the amount of very known people who were vegetarians. It's not that they are better than general population, but for obvious ecological reason, it is very impressive and very important for you to make such a long list of people from very diverse professions with totally different talents, interests, and goals in life are indeed vegetarians. I will mention a few. Charles Darwin. There is Albert Einstein. From my own point, I would say his exuberant energy for science and music certainly benefited from vegetarian diet. Benjamin Franklin never would expect that. Then what really took me by the storm is Gustav Mahler being a musician. I frankly did not know that. But then I remembered that he had some complex life, not only as an individual, but he had some heart problem. And without any shadow of the doubt, I believe that this diet and his discipline about life, which I did read about, certainly prolonged his life, being vegetarian. You certainly put Paul McCartney, whom we know all, and Hank Aaron, who is a celebrity baseball player. So this notion that if you don't eat, you don't have, if you don't eat meat, I should say, you don't have a high level of energy, is such myth. It's such a misplacement in people's mind. So let's make our link into the nutritional values of vegetarian food, perhaps break it to some groups from beans to vegetables to fruits. And before doing so, I like to ask you, what is your vision in terms of amino acids, in terms of that very important component, which again connects to very large consumption of meat, but indeed can be found in some other sources?
Shall I take that one? No. The amino acids are the building blocks of protein, and a lot of people think that you can only get your protein from meat, and that's why they are confused as to how so many vegetarians do so well. But the reality is that lots of different foods have lots of different amino acids and therefore lots of protein in them. You can get protein from grains, you can get protein from beans, legumes, you can also get protein from lots of different vegetables. And as far as the actual amino acids are concerned, you might know that there are 8 essential amino acids which we need to create the building blocks in our own bodies. And all of those building blocks, all of those different amino acids occur in a lot of different fruits and vegetables, not fruits so much, but vegetables, grains, legumes, as well as meat and dairy and things like that. But they're all in different proportions in different foods. And so if you ate, say, potatoes for the rest of your life, and only potatoes, you would get all the protein you need. But you'd have to eat an awful lot of potatoes to achieve that, because some of the amino acids in those potatoes are only there in very small quantities. And so in order to get the right ratios of all the different amino acids, it's much better for us if we eat a wide variety of different foods. In meat in particular, and in dairy products, there are some amino acids, methionine in particular, which are very acidic on our bodies. And what happens when people eat a lot of meat or a lot of dairy is we get way too much of those particular amino acids. And that can give us problems such as kidney stones, osteoporosis, which is where your bones start to break down. And one of the reasons that that happens is because the body has got too much acid in it, and so it looks for a neutralizer. And the calcium in your bones acts as that neutralizer. It's kind of like the Tums for your body. So it takes your body instinctively wants to neutralize that excessive acid, and so it takes the calcium out of your bones to neutralize the acid, and therefore leaves your bones with less structure, less calcium. And I think that that's really a big cause of osteoporosis that people aren't aware of. And it's one of the reasons why the protein in meat is not so, and dairy products as well, is not so good for us. And it's much better to get our protein from plant-based sources such as beans and whole grains and vegetables.
Critically important point, and if I may add to it, this situation with calcium, especially after menopausal age, is a such a area of controversy, because shelves with the calcium supplements are filled, they're overfilled, and yet we don't have any less of osteoporosis, and maybe cautiously, unfortunately, I would say there is unfortunate development of this very, very serious condition, debilitating condition. And your comment is so well taken, because indeed, unfortunately, when we take this calcium, if we take that, it goes where calcium does not need to be. It is provoking this calcification. And I had conducted a number of programs with specialists and nutritionists of your caliber and your knowledge, and we all came to the conclusion that indeed what you just said is so correct, that milk product is not a solution. If anything, it's very harmful. We cannot digest cow products, cow milk. I would say a bit with somewhat compromise to someone like myself, I will confess, I do try to use some goat products, which has more compatibility with human anatomy and physiology. But your comments and very clear explanation regarding acidity, regarding calcium, and ultimately this myth about getting amino acids from meat is very well taken. So I wanted to thank you for making that comment so explicitly clear. We will move on with your next chapters. You already covered quite a bit regarding the reasons for being vegetarian. And I just jumping a little bit ahead, and then if you would not mind, we will come back to your book. But I wanted to make one comment, and I will do the best I can to bring a little bit of theatrical, so to speak, element in the ready, which I love to do, and to talk about one picture which you put in your book, and with a wonderful accompaniment of the words from saying of George Bernard Shaw. He said, "Animals are my friends. I don't eat my friends." And you have a very charming group of animals, beautiful family. I guess it's a maybe pig, a little goat, I don't know, whoever is there. But it is just a lovely animal family, which made me feel very amused. And you just made a wonderful point. Sometimes one picture substitute many words. I like to make a link to the environment, because killing animals is terrible invasion in our environment. And you made it very clear in your book. So let's talk about growing animal organically, growing animal as a free range. If you can clarify it about animal life and what we as a society are doing with them.
Stuart, would you like to take that one?
Well, sure. You know, we don't grow animals the way we used to. 100 years ago, most farm animals wandered in the pasture, chewing on the grass, and foraging for the greens. And after a few years, Grandpa would take one of the animals behind the barn with a shotgun, and it would be all over in a second. But we don't raise animals that way anymore. We have what's known now as factory farms. In fact, don't be deceived by the few animals that you see wandering on the side of the road. Most of the world's farming now is done with factory farms. And in factory farms, animals are penned up, chained up. They can't wander. They live their life at feed troughs. Sometimes, in the case of chickens and pigs, they're kept so confined they can't turn around once, even in their entire lives. They're treated very harshly, and then they're killed in slaughterhouses. And there's an old saying that if slaughterhouses had glass walls, we'd all be vegetarians. And at this point, I would add, complementing that, if our arteries, with all that saturated fat and cholesterol, had glass walls, we'd be vegetarians too. One of the things, to just going back to the protein issue, is one of the big advantages of vegetarian protein is that it doesn't come packaged with all that saturated fat and cholesterol. But back to the animals. So it's factory farming of animals that's made things really, really, really harsh. Free range doesn't have any legal definitions to it yet. There may be some coming in for chickens, but not for other animals, and so you can't really be sure how the animal is treated. And, of course, they pretty much all die in the same way. We won't shock anybody with the details, but it's unpleasant. And, you know, people sometimes wonder, well, does it matter? And, you know, they say they're animals. Well, the key issue with animals is not can they reason the way human beings can, or can they think the way we can, because, of course, they can't. The only question, and we raise this in the book, is can they suffer? And the answer to that is an unequivocal yes. Just the listeners out there can just ask themselves this question. If animals can't feel pain, then why do they test pain medication on them? And so life is very harsh on the factory farm, and a vegetarian diet is easier on them. And considering that vegetarians on average live 13 years longer, it's easier on us too.
That's another human statistic. I like to make sure that our listeners know that I have this wonderful time and that you graciously enter our air space with your knowledge, your expertise, and with your absolutely indispensable book. On the air with me, very, very special co-authors, Amanda Strombom and Stuart Rose. I have to ask you to give our listeners to make sure that you can be found. And if you have a website or suggestion where your book can be bought, I would appreciate that. I think you will do that much better than I.
Well, we certainly do have a website. Our organization is called Vegetarians of Washington. We're based in the Seattle area. And our website is vegetariansofwashington.org. So that's pretty easy to find. On that, we do have a page for each of our books. So there's a special page for the book called Say No to Meat. And from that page, that you can get to that page by just clicking on the picture of the book from our homepage. And from that page, you can link through to Amazon.com to purchase the books, either in paper form or in Kindle form. The books are also available. They're nationally published, so you can get them from any regular bookstore would be able to order them from you for you, even if they don't have them in stock. Or you'd be able to get them on other websites as well that commonly sell books.
So to be brave, I would conclude and saying, I said brave because eat meters would be furious after hearing what I'm going to say, but this is my personal conviction, which happened to be harmoniously corresponded to yours. I would say yes to life and no to meat. And there was a wonderful question in one of the chapters. What is this book presents somewhat different from other vegetarian books? And one section of your answer is actually in the beginning of it says, this book is not written to shock or outrage you, or even just convince you that it is cool to be vegetarian. Since we don't believe that such tricks will help you stay vegetarian for a long time. Can we get a little deeper on this thought? Because sometimes when you see sign on a restaurant, vegetarian restaurants, certainly it is very attractive for people who are vegetarians, and they are feeling almost celebrating that they can find something to eat on the commercial market. But there are certainly great shortage of those restaurants. There is certainly a somewhat unfortunate lack of understanding, still conviction, and in a good word, propaganda. And you talk about Attorney General who was announcing damage of cigarettes, and you said that it took 50 years for people to recognize the damage and fatal conclusion of cigarette smoking. So now we are certainly in a progressive stage where restaurants are free from smoking. What is your vision? What is your optimism in terms of spreading not only word, not only knowledge, not only personal use of vegetarian diet, but do you see it entering a commercial market?
Amanda, Stuart,
you want to say
that?
I'm happy to take that one. The market has been changing rapidly, and just as with cigarettes, you know, first of all, you get the naysayers saying, oh, you know, that all the people who are telling you all about the health benefits are just doing it for publicity reasons or for their own reasons, and they try to negate what you're saying, but just as with cigarettes, gradually, it becomes more and more acceptable. And I think that we've reached the point with vegetarian food that, you know, a vegetarian diet is seen as a very acceptable thing to do. We get a lot less criticism these days. People still have to ask, you know, where do you get your protein from? But I think that it's becoming a lot more common. These days, you can walk into most of the grocery stores and you can find tofu and soy milk readily available. If you go to a restaurant, it may not be a vegetarian restaurant, But most restaurants will have something on their menu which is vegetarian. And if they don't, you can easily ask them to adapt a recipe to make it vegetarian. Just say, hold the bacon on that, or leave the meat out of this dish, and that will make it vegetarian. So I think it's very possible to be, very easy to be vegetarian these days, and it's becoming so much more easy every day. Over the last 10 years since we've been running Vegetarians of Washington, we've seen huge changes in the market for vegetarian foods. And these days there are lots and lots of meat substitute products which are available in the grocery stores. And those products are really good for helping people to start to make the transition where they still feel like they want the taste of meat, but they have the desire to change towards a vegetarian diet. So they choose to eat veggie dogs, veggie burgers, veggie sausages, and so on. And those products are really tasty. And in fact, it's amazing how much like meat some of them taste. As people become more comfortable with being vegetarian, many of them choose to move towards more of a whole foods type of diet, where you're eating food which is the way that it was grown in nature. For example, rice and beans, and in dishes such as a bean burrito, for example. And that would be more of a whole foods type of meal that a vegetarian could eat. And I see those options becoming more and more common. I see a vegetarian diet becoming more and more acceptable. People are comfortable if you say, oh, I'm vegetarian. They say, okay, I'll make sure I provide something vegetarian for you, as opposed to, oh, my gosh, what on earth am I going to cook? I don't know how to cook for this person. So it's getting there very slowly but surely, and I'm hopeful that in the long run, you know, every restaurant will have maybe 50% of their, obviously I would love it if every restaurant went vegetarian, but recognizing that despite all of the health information about cigarette smoking, we still have 25% of people smoking cigarettes. Obviously we are still going to have people eating meat for a long, long time to come. So if we could get to the point where we have 50% of menu options being vegetarian in every restaurant, I think that would be wonderful. And for vegetarian diets to be recommended to everyone as the best for their health, and to be encouraged in all situations. I just read recently that one of the cafeterias in the University of North Texas has gone totally vegan. So there are more options for people in different places, in institutional situations, where they are providing vegetarian and vegan options. And that's wonderful news, and it shows that we're making some progress.
It is a remarkable, remarkable news and such a hope. Certainly very anxious to get into specific groups of food and discuss everyday practical preparation, how transparent and almost elegant recipes can be, colorful, engaging, and you can use your fantasy, your experimental curiosity, how to mix and how to get most delightful dishes. And before doing that, I like to come back a little bit to what Stuart was talking about, animals. That is particularly, I think, deserves a little bit more attention, because people in this country really don't quite realize that this piece of meat they're eating was not really as a result of some mother nature action towards the animal. And fortunately, there are a number of animal activists who are against the cruelty and against any kind of inappropriate actions towards animals. And I again have to say that your diligence is so beautifully exposed in this book. you put words of Mr. McCartney, who said that we don't eat anything that has to be killed for us. We've been through a lot, and we are reached the stage where we really value life. So we're actually talking about some philosophical issue, which I mentioned in the very beginning. We're talking about life and death. So in a sense, when we eat and kill animal, we have a touch of death, which our body not quite prepared to accept. So in that philosophical, spiritual note, I like to make a bridge to actually practical foods and this marvelous menu and assortment of various ingredients. You did already mention beans, and you mentioned tofu. There is a seitan, and there are a number of soy products. Some people don't have a very easy time with the soy products, but even taking that into consideration, there are many other groups of food, and beans, of course, is a king of vegetable protein. So perhaps you can talk a little bit in greater detail what kind of beans can be suitable for what, and I know that there are some different groups of beans. So without really just drowning in beans, because I wanted to talk about some other foods, let's start from beans family.
Well, there's quite a number of different beans, as you mentioned. The soybean is the one that's used in the most variety, and tofu and tempeh and textured soy protein are all products which are made out of that. But to move on from the soy and into the other kinds of beans, you may be familiar with black beans or black-eyed peas. There's chickpeas, which are also known as garbanzo beans. There's great northern beans, there's kidney beans, there's lima beans, there's pinto beans. There's just so many different types of beans. And one of our favorites is actually the lentil. And that's really special because they are very digestible. They take a very short time to cook, so that makes it a lot easier to prepare them. And there's so much variety that you can... So there's many different types of lentils, actually. And the lentils in India are known as dal, and so one really good source of good vegetarian meals is to go to an Indian restaurant and try their dal. But there's also there's the red lentils and the brown lentils, and lentils are used in many different cuisines, lentil soups, and you can make lentil patties. And you can throw them into salads. So there's a really lot of useful ways to include lentils in your diet. In fact, there's even a lentil festival happening this coming weekend in Pullman, Washington.
Oh, I wish I could be closer. didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just wanted to jump in and to say that just my... thin memories of microbiotic diet, which I somewhat incorporated in my lifestyle, but not as nearly as strict as Mr. Mucho Kushi wanted us all to experience. But saying that, there is a winter food and there is a summer food, and beans are very, very warming. And it is so wonderful that you made all this all this variety so clear, because indeed those selections are very different. And in the cooking time, and you mentioned the lentils, I'm using it all the time because it's simple, delicious, and very grateful, I would say, because no matter what kind of a spice you will put it, spice will be singing. So the fact that the beans are in such a great variety, that can be somewhat a foundation for our everyday diet. If we can go to tofu family, I know that there is, again, very interesting misconception Some people think that tofu is a low fat. In fact, tofu is not a low fat, but it's very good fat. And these low fat diets are just a terrible poison for our life because they're missing what we need. In fact, we're missing good oil and good fat, which we cannot live without. So could you tell us a little bit about tofu and some touch of recipes with the tofu?
Well, tofu is, like I said, made from soybeans, and there's two main types of tofu. There's regular tofu and silken tofu. And regular tofu you find typically in a case which is full of water, so the cake of tofu is actually floating in the water. And that can be labeled as soft or firm or extra firm, depending on how much water has been absorbed into the tofu. And regular tofu is particularly good as a meat substitute because it really absorbs marinades very well, different flavorings. So you can marinate tofu in a sauce to let it absorb some flavors, or you can rub a spice rub onto the tofu and then fry it or bake it. There's a lot of different ways of cooking with tofu. And the other type of tofu is silken tofu, and that's much more of a creamy type of tofu. It works really well in things which you might blend. So I wouldn't choose to cube that type of tofu into squares where you're going to be frying it. But what I would do is put it in a blender, and you could make it into something like a quiche. You can make it into a pumpkin pie with a can of pumpkin and some spices and some sweetener. You can make a smoothie from tofu with some fruit and some bananas, and you can make it. That can be a delicious pudding. Or if you make it with soy milk instead of tofu, then it becomes a more drinkable smoothie. So that's some of the uses of tofu. In terms of some regular dishes which people may be familiar with, the Thai cuisine from Thailand has an amazing variety of different tofu dishes. So there's tofu curries and tofu stir fries, and also the Chinese cuisine. You can get tofu stir fries as well. Like I was saying, though, you can cook tofu in so many different ways. You can crumble it up and use it in a lasagna. You could put it in, you can bake it into a cake, which you could put in a burger. Not a cake as in a sweet cake, but I'm thinking more in terms of a burger or a patty that you could use. So rubbing the outside of the tofu with some different spice mix, and then either frying it or grilling it a little bit before it will make it into a good patty that you could use in a burger or a sandwich or something like that. And you can actually buy baked tofu in the grocery store, which is pre-marinated, and you can it's served cold. You can just slice that up and put that in sandwiches. There's different flavors, savory flavor and teriyaki flavor and things, which are typically available in a lot of different grocery stores these days. And that's a really good way of including some tofu into a sandwich, or you could chop it up into little cubes and put it into a salad. So there's so many different ways you could use tofu. It's amazing.
Of course, there are recipes in your book and absolutely sensational desserts. One took me by the storm, creamy chocolate dream pudding. And I have to say, if you would not be aware of ingredients which are there, you really will enjoy it as an absolutely regular, quote-unquote, tasting dessert. And yet, you will be pleased with wonderful nutritional and very tasty quality finishing of any dinners which you describe here. Of course, I have to say that certain little secrets are here, and they are so simple, and they are in a combination. But you really do not need to memorize or to follow fancy rules. You just have to open your book and to be curious and to see that there is another page of your experience, another wonderful world of health. I'd like to graduate this program with a last thought, which will hopefully make even more important impact and a role in your book. Our economy and tremendous problems with the health care could not ask for more relevant and more important advice from vegetarian habits, world, and benefits. The exuberant costs of food, indeed, in fact, in the world of meat, is driving us to absolute realization that there is an alternative, or maybe the main way to go. And even though vegetables and fruits, especially if they are organic, also grew in their prices, but they still are more affordable, way more, and way more promising to our health, to our survival, and for someone who wants to control and to improve their health problems, certainly the only way to go. I'd like to ask you last question. What I didn't cover in your book, at least for this program, you've been waiting for and you wanted to cover yourself.
Stuart, do you have any particular thoughts that you'd like to cover?
There's a few orientations. We live in a world where very often where we feel we have no control over what's going on. Our food choices are something we can control. You don't need to wait for a government program. You don't need special equipment. You know, health food stores are the best choice to shop in, but even in an ordinary supermarket, you could take the single most effective step for your health. The single most effective step for the environment. As you know, the World Watch report says that raising livestock is the single largest cause of global warming. And the UN says that livestock causes more global warming than all the cars, trains, planes, automobiles, buses, cars, and ships, and the whole world put together. You can take a single step to save an innocent animal with every bite. And in doing so, you won't need any government programs. You won't need any special equipment. You don't need any extra money. And it is almost completely within your control. You need a guide, like our book, which was written to be a complete guide. And you know, a willingness to learn and experiment on a few recipes, and nothing else. And there's nothing standing against you. You'll see in the book that religious leaders from all the different world's religions have endorsed the acceptability of a vegetarian diet, that it is acceptable within their traditions and systems. So here is something that you can take hold of for yourself and begin to put into practice right away. Amanda, you have some?
I'm sorry to jump in, but we are a little bit over time. It was incredibly in-depth, engaging conversation, and my apology to Amanda for not being able to give her last word, but we actually a bit over time with this very memorable, wonderful program, having my guests, Stuart Rose and Amanda Strombom, who are authors and great thinker in a philosophy of life with no meat. And on this note, I will say thank you so much. And until soon, that was another edition of Lina Life. I'm Lina Mirmond.